Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. My name's Marty Bennett. I'm your host, the president and founder of SMIE Consulting. Today, we're going to be taking a look at three issues in this past week's news feeds that came to light that raised some interesting questions about the state of international education around the world. And we'll take an in-depth look at those three topics today. And plus, we'll have a tribute to the late Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana, a personal hero of mine when it comes to international education, and I'll share a little bit about my experience with Senator Lugar and the impact he's had on me professionally and on the field of international education. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up towards the end of the podcast today. And for a refresher for those new to international education and those new to SMIE Consulting, I started the business 5 years ago after leaving Education USA to do consulting work for a number of organizations and institutions, and have had the opportunity to work with many outstanding educators from around the world interested in international education. I'll be posting links to some of the key resources throughout the podcast today and throughout this live chat. And I want to make you aware first of our SMIE Consulting website, smieconsulting.org. Great free resources there for those that are interested in getting in touch with us, and also free resources and other ways to see an archive of these live chats, as well as podcasts from these live chats. And an ongoing blog series from the various resources I'm able to publish to each year, and some presentations that I've done at conferences over the last almost two decades of worth of presentations. So what I'd like to do first off is share those stories that we cover each week in the midweek roundup here on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern are from our SMIE Consulting e-newsletter that comes out Mondays. That's called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. SMIE means social media and international education, my two favorite topics. And that newsletter is a free subscription, and I've posted the link to this week's edition. And if you find that and then click on the subscribe button, you'll be able to subscribe to that newsletter and get that fresh to your inbox each Monday. So we take three or more of the stories from that newsletter each week, and we discuss those in depth here on the Midweek Roundup. Now, the first topic is one that has been as with many things in international education, there are swings and roundabouts. There are ups and downs with what we do in international education, and different countries have periods of growth and then periods of decrease, and periods of growth and periods of decrease. It's a very much a cyclical business we're in. And Australia is certainly one of those countries that post 9/11, when the U.S. was experiencing a bit of a dip in their international student populations, Australia began to see quite a substantial uptick. And they had a fairly strong period of time for a number of years in the mid-noughties up through the early, and then had a little falling off. But then we've seen them rebound quite rapidly and perhaps have been one of the beneficiaries in recent years, particularly the last two or so, with kind of changes in student migration patterns away from perhaps in as large a numbers as the United States to other destination countries like Canada, Australia, and the UK, which have all seen increases in the last year to 3 years. International students in Australia have long been an important part of their economy. And we're seeing a recent report out of University World News that references one of the other stories that I'll cover today, which was a new study coming out of Australia that was put out by an Australian demographer, Dr. Bob Beryl, noticed that overseas students now account for 44% of net overseas migration numbers in Australia. And this is causing substantial strains on institutions, but the focus of the study, frankly, is on why particularly the urban institutions in Australia, in the major cities, and particularly the east of the country, east and southeast of the country, have grown so substantially that those students that once they've graduated have found jobs and are staying in country are causing significant strains on the local economies, not just the contributions that they made as students, but now they're seen more as a drain in according to the results of this study. So there's actually three articles that I'm posting the links to in the comments section on the Facebook page that I certainly recommend reading to give you a good sense of what the breadth of the issues are that are involved. But certainly the University World News takes kind of both sides of the issues, talking first about the study and how the impacts of these the large jump in the number of international students that continue on to work after they finish their studies. We've seen in Australia that these urban centers have become where the biggest magnets for these international students. Now in Melbourne and Sydney, two of the larger cities in Australia, neither the state governments nor the local councils are able to meet all the demands of the citizens. And Birrell says, the author of this study, according to the article, that in both cities, the major factors in population growth is a rapidly rising number of foreign students, although their impact tends to be localized and is concentrated in the inner city areas. So the federal government has announced in Australia ways to reduce the impact of overcrowding in Sydney and Melbourne by diverting some migrants, including potentially these international students, to regional areas. These students that now have permanent visas. The challenge has been really for the urban areas, and he says nearly half of those receiving a permanent entry visa in 2016-17 were already residing in Australia when granted the visa. As a consequence, they're not included in the count of migration arrivals. So there's a larger number of people that are impacting the overall infrastructure of city governments, of regional governments, to accommodate all these. Now, what does Birrell put as the cause of this? Lays it squarely at the foot of colleges and universities in Australia, the 40 colleges and universities of higher education institutions in Australia that he says are largely responsible. He says, quote from Birrell again, "The universities thought that this would promote overseas student enrollments, thus providing them with another source of revenue. It was the start of the slippery slope to the current extraordinary degrees to which universities are dependent on the fee revenue from overseas students to finance their operations, with many higher fees that international students pay at Australian schools, upwards of $28,000 a year. So compared to the U.S. institutions, those fees are relatively modest, the size of what most state institutions, non-flagship state institutions, would charge international students at this point. So these early 2000s is when these Australian universities really start seeing great expanding in their international infrastructure. We see now that there are institutions that in the course of 5 years from 2012 to 2017, the share of international students in Australian universities went from 394,487 in that five-year period, compared to a 15% rise in the number of domestic students. And that meant Australians' institutions, the 40 universities, went from less than 22% international to almost 29% overall amongst the 40 Australian higher education institutions. And at the group of eight, kind of the top most elite Russell Group equivalent schools in the United States, or in the UK, the Ivies and corresponding schools in the United States, we're talking that group of eight is up to 40% international. So significant increases, and the University World News article certainly outlines that. And the second article from that is really about Birrell's study reflects a lot of that information. What is really interesting to see in this is how the Australian institutions have responded. And this is something that I think is a really important piece of the puzzle here, is that you see Australian universities now saying that English language standards, they're in addressing this study that came out, this final article I've cited here, the University's Australia chief said that English language standards set for international students were similar to those in the U.S. and Britain. And overseas studies, students at academic institutions in Australia had similar success in completing their studies compared with local students. Ms. Jackson said Department of Education data in Australia showed the student success rate at 86% compared to 84% for domestic students. Really the focus that she makes with regard to international education is about is similar to what we say in the U.S. and as they say, universities say in the U.K., international education is about strengthening ties with our region and being part of a global community. When international students choose to study in Australia, according to University's Australia chief, Catriona Jackson, she said, when international students choose to study in Australia, they build relationships with our students and our country that last a lifetime. And this mirrors what anybody who's involved in international education says when they talk about the benefits of international students to their countries. Yes, there's the economic, but the reality is that they have far-reaching benefits in terms of public diplomacy, in terms of economic and cultural development. The results are amazing. And certainly countries like Australia that have immigration systems that have allowed, frankly, and made clear pathways for international students to continue on and work and become permanent residents, if not citizens. There are real challenges that are seen, though, behind the scenes that have become part of a growing creep of issues that international students, the growth of international students in Australia has had. Some of these include new evidence of a decline in academic standards at institutions, problems of academic misconduct. Certainly we've seen that in the United States with students who don't have a good understanding of what academic integrity and plagiarism and other issues like that are. There are issues of academic teachers, faculty who are feeling increased pressure to pass students, international students that might be underperforming, because they represent such a large percentage of their classes in many schools, upwards of 40-50%. So these are real significant issues. And the game has become, like we've seen in the U.S. with Operation Varsity Blues, and we've covered that here on this podcast many times, but also the larger international corruption scandals when it comes to international admissions to prominent institutions or to any institution, frankly. The fraudulent credentials, the bank statements that are bogus, that the essays that are written by third parties, that the transcripts are clearly bogus. These are the things that make international education a very treacherous path to tread. And institutions in Australia are starting to see more and more pushback from not only outside local communities pushing back against the huge numbers that they're seeing, but also from within. When you see academics starting to say, "Hey, these students aren't qualified. Their English is terrible." Those are things we hear in the U.S. too. But to the extent that they might be impacting public policy in that country is a significant one, and one that certainly need to keep our eyes on. So that's the big story out of Australia, a fairly meaty one, certainly one we'll keep a close eye on here. The next major topic that I'll cover is related to China. We just a couple of weeks ago on this midweek roundup, we talked about what is happening on the larger global scale with China's soft power initiatives. We talked about the Belt and Road Initiative. We talked about a lot of the funding and infrastructure projects that China has built in addition to transportation, building bases, building economic ties, particularly in Africa and South Asia, to really expand their influence globally. Part of that has been bringing students to China for study. We've talked in the past how China is now second or third in terms of the largest receiver of international students to their shores. What the most recent article that I'm posting today may signal that is coming to an end, though, in terms of the interest in studying in China, maybe slowing dramatically, in fact. They've had, as with much when it comes to China and India, and when we hear stories about the economies of those countries and how they're growing double digits or very strong or high single digit growth every year, the same has been true for China in terms of their inbound international student population. They've had double digit increases for a number of years, and have now the year-on-year growth from 2017 to 2018 in China grew only 0.62%. This is after an average annual growth of 10% between 2006 and 2015. So significant signs of slowdown, if not stopping of interest in China as a destination country for their higher education. We've talked in the past how the U.S. has been, I think, number two on their list of international students studying in China. Right now, Asian students make up the greater majority. South Korea sends over 50,000 students last year, Thailand 28,000, Pakistan 28,000, and India 23,000. So that is, again, reflective of the overall growth that the Chinese government is intended to have with regard to international students studying there. So it's interesting, something to keep an eye on. We do have some other information that we posted in the, on another story that we posted in the newsletter this week that actually talked about international school numbers in China, that those numbers are actually growing. And as those that have ever recruited in China know, Chinese nationals typically can't get into these international schools. So the growth in international schools in China is probably reflective more of not Chinese students looking to go there to enhance their chances of going abroad for studies, but really for all the multinationals that have employees and families in China now are increasingly needing places that have international-style education systems that are open and present more transferable credentials for higher education opportunities. So interesting to see how that develops, but certainly keep your eye on what's happening in China. We certainly will here. So we go from kind of these massive numbers that we talk about with Australia, and certainly we talk about with China, to probably one of this, not sadder stories, but certainly a story that is unfortunately a reflection of the times we're in here in the United States. We know that over the last 3 years, certainly last even 4 years since Saudi Arabia announced cutbacks to their national scholarship program, and that Brazilian Scientific Mobility, that government scholarship program, both of which had significant ESL components for those students coming to the United States. Since those programs were cut back or curtailed significantly, ESL programs have been probably the organizations, institutions that have suffered most in the United States. And certainly I worked at an institution at that time that had significant drop-offs in their international student enrollments because of the loss of Saudi students and other significant populations during the kind of the 2016 to 2018 period. And that is, again, reflective of larger trends. It wasn't just our institution. These have been happening nationwide. And increasingly, we see English language programs, intensive English programs on university campuses very much struggling to keep their doors open, frankly. And at a minimum, they're struggling to maintain their full range of offerings just because they don't have the enrollments to justify the staff and other costs that are involved in that and having those programs. So we're seeing now, we just posted the link on the Facebook page to this, of English language programs now starting to close. Loyola University in Chicago is the latest to suffer the fate, where they have forced to close their English language learning program. It's made up of both part-time and full-time faculty members. And that is a significant issue, obviously, for Loyola to be able to attract students at a wider range of abilities, not just those that have full English language ability that can start right away, but it's also those that impacting migrants or immigrants or refugees that are living in the Chicago area that might be enrolling, needing English language study. So there are 68 students that are now in limbo. and the faculty are negotiating their severance packages with the university. So it's a very sad state of affairs that brings about the kind of closings that we're starting to see. There are independent English language programs not connected to individual institutions that are suffering as well. Even some of the larger chains are beginning to suffer and to close some centers around the country. So there's always challenges involved in international education and understanding and having the foresight to be long-range thinkers when it comes to these things. Oftentimes, programs are forced to go with it, whatever's expedient, whatever can fill the seats, and to keep their doors open. And that's something that, unfortunately, not all schools, and Loyola, obviously, is an example of an institution that didn't have a backup, really, when they started to lose all these other former scholarship students who were filling their seats in the mid-teens, early to mid-teens, and that certainly dried up to a large extent. There may be some signs that that's coming back from places in the Middle East. I'll be working, for example, on a scholarship program for Emirati undergrads and Saudi graduate students, finding places for them over the next 3 or 4 months for conditional admissions that will help populate a lot of English language programs that have spaces and can offer that kind of conditional admission program. So for me, I really have have a lot of sympathy for programs like what's happening at Loyola, but there's also a part of me that says, hey, some of these things were foreseeable and some are not, but certainly institutions that have a longer range vision when it comes to international education and certainly within their English language programs in terms of diversifying where those students are coming from, those are the institutions that survive these downturns. Unfortunately, it looks like Loyola's ELLP program is not one of those, so sad to see that. The last thing I'll end with today is kind of also a bittersweet, it's a very sad story. I'm talking about the death of Senator Richard Lugar. For those who know me, I've been involved in international education for a number of years, and I've posted the links to our Midweek Roundup, the podcast of this live chat, as well as our website, pictures of those on the side here of the video chat. But Richard Lugar, for those who don't know me and my background, I lived and worked in Indiana for 7 years, both at St. Mary's College in South Bend, Indiana, as well as Ball State University for 5 years. During that time, I had the pleasure of being involved in the growth and development of Destination Indiana, one of the many state consortia that came onto the scene in the mid-2000s. And one of the things we had a particular focus on is working with our elected officials, particularly those in D.C., to help support what we were doing as a state to have Indiana as a destination for international students. We had, three different occasions, our group had the opportunity to do events or do something with Senator Lugar, the first of which was in 2004. I had the opportunity to meet him, and a picture of me and Senator Lugar in my younger days, pre-beard, where in 2004 we had asked Senator Lugar if we could have an event on Capitol Hill in a Senate committee room that we could serve as a college fair for us to connect with different scholarship bodies that are represented in D.C., as well as embassies that have scholarship programs. And he arranged the facility for us. He opened the ceremony, and he came around and met with us individually. We had the opportunity to shake his hand and get to know him a little better. He took the time one-on-one, and obviously we got these individualized pictures afterwards. So that really was a great insight into the man that he took the time. He's not just a politician. Obviously, we're constituents from Indiana institutions, but he took the time to get to know us. We know anyone who's been on Capitol Hill knows and done any advocacy work there knows that international ed is generally seen as a fairly bipartisan white hat issue there. And Senator Lugar certainly reached across the aisle many times in his political career to help build bridges. And even Senator Obama, when he first joined the U.S. Senate, received a congratulatory note from Senator Lugar. And they established a very good relationship. And Senator Obama had a nice tribute to him on Monday that Senator Lugar was a problem solver. And one of the things at the time in 2004 that we had, we noticed, obviously post 9/11 working at a U.S. institution, were impacted by the changes in visa regulations and how visas were being adjudicated abroad and the security clearances and all of that. Senator Lugar, in his position as chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, really took it upon himself to do something about it. He held visa hearings that were also scheduled. He scheduled the same day as our event on Capitol Hill. So he invited us, all of our member institutions, representatives, to attend those student visa hearings. And that was phenomenal for us professionally, and to see that happening and see our senior senator from Indiana really taking up the charge for what we were doing there and what we were doing for institutions in the United States. But he was a firm believer in international education. He sponsored the Kennedy Lugar YES program, Youth and Exchange Studies. And he is and will forever be in my heart as a real champion for international education, and will be sorely missed. Certainly when he lost his re-election bid in 2012, that light in the Senate certainly was gone, but he was still an advocate for international education. And now those who had the pleasure of knowing him can live on, live out his legacy, and when it comes to international education. So I invite you to say a prayer for his family, and pray for leaders like him to emerge. There are very few, if any, like him left on the Hill. But we pray for people like him to come to the fore and to represent what's truly good about what we do in international education. So that's what we have for tonight, today's edition of the Midweek Roundup. So thank you again for joining me. It's always a pleasure to get to connect with you and share our views on what's happening in our profession, and look forward to more conversations down the road. Have a wonderful day.